At Public.com, you can earn 5.1% APY with a high-yield cash account. And while we can't say it's officially the highest interest rate out there, we can say this. It's higher than Robinhood, SoFi, Wealthfront, Capital One, and the big banks, too. Ready to start earning 5.1% APY on your cash? Check out the high-yield cash account on Public.com. This is paid for by Public Investing. 5.1% APY as of March 26, 2024, and is subject to change. A high-yield cash account is a secondary brokerage account with Public Investing, member FINRA/SIPC. Funds from this account are automatically deposited into partner banks where they earn a variable interest and are eligible for FDIC insurance. Neither Public Investing nor any of its affiliates is a bank. U.S. only. Learn more at public.com/disclosure/high-yield-account.
What do Donald Rumsfeld and this government shutdown have in common? Not a trick question, by the way. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdal. Monday, the 14th of January. Good as always to have you along, everybody. With apologies to those for whom this next voice that you're going to hear will be jarring. What he says does have a certain currency in this economic moment.
There are known knowns. There are things we know we know. We also know there are known unknowns. That is to say, we know there are some things we do not know. But there are also unknown unknowns. The ones we don't know, we don't know.
Donald Rumsfeld there, obviously, at the time. He was talking in 2002. He was the Secretary of Defense. Here is the kicker.
It is the latter category that tend to be the difficult ones.
The unknown unknowns, terra incognita, if you will, which in our present circumstance is this economy going into its fourth week with parts of the government of the United States being shut down. But there were the holidays early on, and people were coping over the short term. But then a payday was missed. Negotiations have been going nowhere. And with this now the longest shutdown, we don't really know what we don't know about what's going to happen. Never been here before. But we can get some pretty good analysis of it, and Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer did exactly that.
Washington is a bit less crowded these days. With the furloughed workers at home, it's easier to get a seat on the Metro. The lines at lunch are shorter. Great for me, but not so great for Metro or local lunch spots. Economist Nancy Vandenhouten at Oxford Economics says they're hurting.
It's a restaurant owner or perhaps an Uber driver, people, you know, whose own livelihoods might depend on, you know, a workforce in a particular community.
And we're not just talking about Washington. Furloughed federal workers are spread out across the country. Vandenhouten says now that they've missed their first paycheck, those workers will spend less. The longer they go without pay, the less they spend.
And that has a ripple effect.
Aaron Klein is an economist at the Brookings Institution. He says the shutdown snowballs, affecting more and more people faster as it hits them.
And that will have a ripple effect throughout the economy, centralized in communities where there are a lot of government employees.
Government contractors are also hurting. If the agencies they work for are closed, there's no work. Columbia University political science professor Gregory Wawrow says as the shutdown snowball gathers speed, they'll have to cut back.
And that might mean furloughs of private employees and cutbacks on investment decisions that will have, again, have a longer-term impact.
And as they cut back, the snowball grows. In Washington, I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer for Marketplace.
Let me riff off of Nancy's last line there about businesses in general, not just government contractors specifically. What do you suppose they're thinking right now? We've talked to Todd Adams a couple of times over the past year or so. He runs Sanitube. It's a maker and importer of stainless steel products. So our conversations have been mostly about tariffs, but we called him up today to talk shutdown. Mr. Adams, good to talk to you, sir.
Good to talk to you, Kai.
So here we are, day, I've lost count, 24, I think, of this shutdown. You're running a small business in this economy. How you doing?
Well, you know, most of the business we do is in the private sector, so we aren't directly affected by the shutdown, but we do have some concerns. We import a lot of the fittings that we modify here at our Florida fabrication facility. With the shutdown, you know, I would imagine Customs and Border Protection is somewhat short-staffed. There is a large influx of goods coming in from China right now because of the Chinese New Year holiday, which is an annual occurrence every February. So the ports are already going to be strained, and with the shutdown, there could be further delays.
Seems to me you're kind of on the pointy end of two big things in this economy right now. The shutdown, first of all, but also the tariffs, because we've had you on the program before talking about how the tariffs are affecting your ability to import the stuff you need.
Absolutely. And we're still fighting that battle. We've unfortunately had to, you know, pass on some of the increased costs due to tariffs to customers. You know, they understand, obviously, it's everyone knows about the tariffs. And so we've been able to recuperate those costs. But, you know, what hit us particularly hard was the way the tariffs were initially implemented.
Right.
They were actually retroactive. So we did lose a large amount of money that we have since, that we still have not had reimbursed, even though we...
How large, sir?
Let's just say several hundred thousand dollars.
Wow. That's a lot of money.
Yeah. For a company of our size, it is. I know for some people it's not, but the exemption has been granted for
right.
one of our two applications, but it's not being processed now because of the shutdown.
So where are you getting your information on the status of your exemption request and other things that, you know, you sort of need to do your importing business?
All of the information I've gotten, you know, in regards to the exemption process and the Section 232 tariffs, almost all of it has come from Representative Jackie Walorski out of Indiana.
Oh, yeah. We've had her on the show.
Yeah, she's a Republican, and she has an excellent newsletter.
Huh.
And that's really been my primary source of information. There was no notice sent to us that the exemption process, for instance, was shut down due to the government shutdown. But Walorski let us know.
Huh. So what happens to you, Mr. Adams, if this shutdown goes another, I'm going to pick a number here because at this point, who knows, 6 weeks?
Well, you know, I don't know exactly. I think there's a lot of uncertainty, and that's the problem. Will we have shipments that are held up in the port? Possibly. You know, will we still go yet another month, 2 months without the funds that we've paid in tariffs not being reimbursed?
Right.
That's almost certainly going to happen.
Scale of 1 to 10, what's your frustration level?
Just overall, it's a good 8.
So you still got two more to go till you get, you know, to the top of the limit.
Oh, yeah, and we're taking it in stride. I mean, you know, overall, we find ways to work around these things. That's what small businesses do.
Todd Adams, president of Sanitube. They make steel tubes for food-grade and sanitary stuff. Mr. Adams, thanks very much for your time. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Coming up tomorrow on the Marketplace Morning Report, the latest and maybe not so greatest about what will be day 25 of this shutdown. On Wall Street today, it was down. Just like Friday, but a calm down, also just like Friday. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. Last year, the Trump administration added or bumped up tariffs on $280 billion worth of imports, everything from solar panels and washing machines to steel and aluminum to about half of everything that we import from China. We have been telling you with some degree of regularity about what those tariffs are doing to companies and entire industries, but what about us, consumers? According to new data from the New York Fed, the Consumer Price Index, which tracks price changes on a whole basket of goods and services, it's 0.3% higher now than it would have been without the tariffs. Marketplace's Tracy Samuelson reports on what that actually looks like at the cash register.
So far, price increases haven't been very noticeable, at least for consumers. The new tariffs affect only about 12% of U.S. imports. Researchers at Princeton and the London School of Economics have estimated they add about $112 in extra costs for the average U.S. household each year. $112 over a year. That's less than 1% of their annual household expenditures.
Pretty negligible, to be honest, but it'd be another pair of shoes, probably.
I'm willing to pay it if it's American made.
That's barely a hiccup. You know what that is? That is a pimple on a bull's butt.
That was Greg Ward from New York, Patricia Becker from Florida, and colorful Howard Thompson from Connecticut.
Some people tend to say that, you know, these new tariffs are really terrible and create a huge price increase for people. I wouldn't go that far, at least so far.
Kirill Borsak is a postdoc at Princeton, one of the researchers that came up with that $112 cost estimate. He says whether or not consumers notice these price increases, they add up. $100-odd times 120 million American households?
That's a large cost. While the benefit, I mean, you know, the benefit can be debated, but if the benefit of certain saved jobs, then the number of jobs that you save with these limited tariffs is also not that large.
Alexander Geisinger is a poli-sci professor at Temple University.
One of the things that's fascinating is how different it is to think about the aggregate effects that economists clearly worry about and the sort of individual effects.
Individual effects that might change people's spending behavior or how they might vote in an election.
If you think about the impact on an average consumer, you're really going to get different interpretations depending on how you sort of think about what they're purchasing.
In other words, most people might not notice these tariffs unless they have big purchases planned, like buying a washing machine or putting solar panels on their house, two products that are facing high tariffs.
We are due for a washer dryer, and I'm cringing.
Andrea Smith is a lawyer in Connecticut. She's been following the news of tariffs pretty closely.
I'm kicking myself that I didn't do it last year.
The price of washing machines increased 13% last year, which is giving Smith some sticker shock. She says her current washer is old, but still working. So for now, she'll probably hold off on an upgrade. I'm Tracy Samuelson for Marketplace.
It's been 30 years since the teachers of the Los Angeles Unified School District have gone out on strike, but today they went. More than 30,000 teachers, nurses, and staff are on the picket lines. Almost 500,000 students, or that slice of them that showed up, are in classrooms being managed by administrators and substitutes. It's a pretty textbook set of disagreements between the LAUSD and the teachers' union, with, though, some implications beyond just Los Angeles, as Marketplace's Ben Bradford reports.
It's an unusually rainy day in L.A., but dozens of teachers and nurses with umbrellas and ponchos picketed outside Belmont High School. History teacher Justin Daza-Ritchie says class size has to come down.
In my AP government, they put 40-something on the list. AP, we're supposed to have a smaller group where we can actually have college-like discussions. When you have 45, you don't have a class, you have a warehouse.
The union is also calling for more support staff and a 6.5% pay raise. Now, California teacher pay is already relatively high compared to other states until you factor in the cost of living, English teacher Melissa Mackey.
I am not really here about a raise. However, living in Los Angeles is extremely expensive.
That's a constraint on districts and teachers across California. Patrick Murphy at the Nonpartisan Public Policy Institute of California says another issue is that spending per student is low across the state.
So if you're spending quite a bit more per teacher, but you don't spend so much per student, one way to do that is with larger classes.
So in every California district, officials and teacher unions are fighting over a relatively small pie, even though they don't get to decide the size of that pie. That's largely up to the state. California spends 40% of its annual budget on education. But Murphy says California would have to spend another 40% to be competitive with top states and give LA Unified School District and teachers more latitude for their negotiation. In Los Angeles, I'm Ben Bradford for Marketplace.
Coming up.
They were all freaking out, like, oh my God, how are we ever going to explain this to our clients, and how are we ever going to put this into practice?
Taxes. You can't live with them, can't live without them. But first, let's do the numbers. Dow Industrial's down 86 points today, about 0.3%, 23,909. The NASDAQ dipped 65 points, that is 0.9%, 69.05. The S&P 500 off 13, about 0.5%, 2,582. New competition for Tesla. It seems it shed 0.3% today as car makers unveiled new electric car initiatives at the Detroit Auto Show, technically the North American Auto Show, by the way. Ford says it's investing $11 billion in EVs by 2022. Ford found 1.9%. General Motors said it's working on an all-electric Cadillac. GM advanced 1.2% today. Pacific Gas, an electric, down 52%, 52%, after the giant utility said it would file for bankruptcy protection before the end of this month. PG&E faces at least $30 billion in potential liability from wildfires out here in California in 2017 and 18. The company announced yesterday that its CEO is stepping down. You're listening to Marketplace. Not everybody gets a chance to learn about the economy in school. Marketplace helps you continue your education in a way that's smart, accessible, and hopefully even a bit fun. Your donation is not only an investment in your own learning, but also in helping us make more people smart about the economy, and that is good for everyone. To learn how you can help, visit marketplace.org/investors, and thanks.
Now your ideas don't have to wait. Now they have everything they need to come to life. Dell Technologies and Intel are creating technology that loves ideas, loves expanding your business, evolving your passions. We push what technology can do, so great ideas can happen right now. Find out how to bring your ideas to life at Dell.com. Welcome to Now.
Looking for the highest interest rate on your cash? At Public.com, you can earn 5.1% APY with a high-yield cash account. And while we can't say it's officially the highest interest rate out there, we can say this. It's a higher rate than Robinhood, a higher rate than SoFi, a higher rate than Marcus, a higher rate than Wealthfront, frankly, a higher rate than Capital One, a higher rate than Ally, a higher rate than Barclays, a way higher rate than Bank of America and Chase, a higher rate than Citi, Wells Fargo, Discover, and it's a higher rate than American Express, too. So if you want to start earning 5.1% APY on your cash, check out public.com. We can't say it's the highest interest rate, but it's pretty darn up there. This is paid for by Public Investing. 5.1% APY as of March 26, 2024, and is subject to change. A high-yield cash account is a secondary brokerage account with Public Investing, member FINRA/SIPC. Funds from this account are automatically deposited into partner banks where they earn a variable interest and are eligible for FDIC insurance. Neither Public Investing nor any of its affiliates is a bank. U.S. only. Learn more at public.com/disclosure/high-yield-account.
Behind every successful business is a story, and some of them might surprise you. Like how Chobani's first yogurt factory was discovered on a piece of junk mail. Or how the founder of the multi-million dollar cosmetics brand Drunk Elephant was told by everyone, including her own mother, that the name sounded like a dive bar. On the podcast How I Built This, host Guy Raz talks to founders behind the world's biggest companies to learn how they built them. In each episode, you'll hear entrepreneurs share moments of doubt, failure, and how they were able to overcome setbacks on their way to the top. How I Built This is like a masterclass in innovation and creativity, a how-to guide for navigating life's challenges from the people who've done it all. Follow How I Built This wherever you get your podcasts. Listen early and ad-free right now on Wondery Plus. For more business content like this, listen on Wondery, the destination for business podcasts. With shows like How I Built This, Business Wars, and many more, Wondery means business.
This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Ryssdal. The U.S. Chamber of Commerce has weighed in on the government shutdown, and it is not amused. The chamber's executive vice president, Neil Bradley, wrote an open letter to Congress last week saying, and this is a quote, "The adverse consequences of the shutdown are wide and growing." We've had Neil Bradley on the program a couple of times now talking about the chamber's policy agenda and the Trump White House. So we called him up again today. Neil, it's good to talk to you again.
Glad to talk to you, Kai.
So this letter goes out under your signature a couple of days ago. You say with each passing day, the situation will only get worse, talking, of course, about the shutdown. What are you hearing from your members about how bad things are getting?
Literally each day we hear from a new company who's encountering some problem that they didn't anticipate. We hear about small businesses, for example, who can't get an EIN number from the IRS to actually open up and start doing business.
An employer number, yeah.
Exactly. We hear about companies who are waiting on permits to sell goods that they've already produced, that they're waiting to ship, but maybe they need a permit from the Department of Treasury because they're a craft brewer. They can't get permits. They got product that's simply sitting in warehouses, unable to ship to consumers.
The other thing you say in this letter, Neil, beyond that it's time to end the shutdown and get the government fully back to work, you devote a whole paragraph to the immigration system and how broken it is. So my supposition is that you at the chamber want immigration fixed as a larger part of resolving the policy differences in Washington.
We do. It's long past time to fix our broken immigration system, to take some common sense steps like providing protection for Dreamers, for example, and long-term TPS beneficiaries. But our overarching point is it's time to get the government open. We're doing too much harm to American families and businesses.
Okay, so look, apologies for poking you in the eye on this one, but you as the executive vice president of the U.S. Chamber of Commerce have written this letter. Your boss, the CEO, Tom Donahue, went on a different public radio program whose initials are Weekend Edition Saturday this weekend, said basically the same thing. And yet the president of the United States is ignoring the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. What does that tell you?
Well, he's ignoring lots of people, right? We're not the only ones saying that there are problems with having the government shut down. He's increasingly ignoring a large number of members of his own party. Listen, he has priorities, and we share in some of those priorities. But a government shutdown isn't bringing us any closer to a solution on immigration. These are days in his administration that he's never going to get back. So we're hoping that both parties come together, find a solution, and get us out of this mess.
The chamber came out the other day with something that caught my eye. It was a change to your grading, I guess, of political candidates. And you know, you, like many other interest groups in Washington, grade political candidates on and incumbents on how they vote on your issues. And you now are explicitly saying, and this is a change, that you will take into account bipartisanship when you start grading these candidates. Why? What's changed for you that you think this is now important?
Well, one of the biggest problems we face is that elected officials seem to get punished more often than rewarded when they work across the aisle. We'd like to change that dynamic, so we decided to have that reflected in our score. You know, the old adage in business is that, you know, you measure what you value. Today, there's a premium on bipartisanship, so we've decided to measure it and make it part of our scorecard.
A cynic would say here, Neil, that, well, let's see, you've gotten what you want in the last 2 years, right? You've gotten tax reform, you've gotten the deregulatory agenda, you spent heavily on Republican candidates in the 2018 cycle, and oh, look, now it's time for bipartisanship.
Well, I tell you, there's a lot of stuff we haven't gotten done that we really want to see get done. Infrastructure, for example, immigration reform, which we've already talked about. They're going to happen because parties come together and they work across the aisle. And they also happen to be three of our top priorities for the upcoming year.
How long do you think this shutdown goes?
You know, it's hard to say. I would have predicted that it would be over by now when it started. But right now, it's hard to see how this comes to a quick end.
Neil Bradley is the Executive Vice President, also the Chief Policy Officer at the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. Neil, thanks for your time. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Guy. Have a great day.
If I could raise the specter of Donald Rumsfeld once again on this program and the whole idea of unknown unknowns, here is what happens nowadays when you call the Internal Revenue Service.
Welcome to the Internal Revenue Service. Live telephone assistance is not available at this time.
We are just about to start the first filing season since the new tax law went into effect, as I'm sure you know. We are also doing it, as you just heard, with the IRS running a bare-bones staff. Even before the shutdown, though, the looming tax deadline was a scary prospect for a lot of companies in this economy because, unknown unknowns, there's a whole lot of confusion over what some parts of the law are going to mean for businesses. Case in point, a new 20% tax deduction. Marketplace's Mariel Segarra is on the tax beat.
There's a nursing home in North Carolina called Smithfield Manor, and its owner, Carol Arne, has this problem. It's getting harder and harder to hold on to her employees. Specifically, nursing assistants. They're in high demand right now, and they have a tough job.
Dealing with the dying process and the aging process can take its toll on you.
Arne wants to start a retention program, hand out bonuses, but she needs a way to pay for it. She heard that under the new tax law, she might be eligible for this big tax break. Her accountant, Jeremy Bass, says it could save
about 7.5 cents of tax for every dollar that you make.
Problem is, they don't know whether or not her business qualifies. The new tax law cut taxes for corporations from 35 to 21%. But that didn't apply to certain kinds of businesses, like LLCs and S-corporations. They're called pass-throughs, and they pay taxes based on their owner's personal income, not the corporate tax rate. So Congress came up with a tax break for them, too. They can deduct up to 20% off their income when they do their taxes. But that wasn't the end of it, because some tax experts said this new deduction could easily be abused.
Let's walk through a hypothetical.
Nicole Kading is an economist at the Tax Foundation, a think tank in D.C.
I have an incentive because of this provision to walk into my boss's office and to say, I'm sorry, but I no longer can work here at the Tax Foundation.
Then she could form a new LLC that would do the same work for the Tax Foundation and call itself a business to get the deduction. Last summer, the IRS came up with some rules to keep people from gaming the system. They are more than 180 pages long, and they're filled with caveats, like a list of businesses and industries that do not qualify for the tax break. Here's Jeremy Bass, the nursing home's accountant, again.
It's accountants, attorneys, actuaries, performing arts, consultants, stockbrokers, athletes.
Oh, and healthcare businesses. The IRS tried to draw clear lines between who gets the deduction and who doesn't, but there are still a lot of questions. Is a nursing home like Smithfield Manor considered a health business? It does have nurses on staff.
But they're also providing room and board, dietary services, activities. So there's a sort of a gray area there.
The government is still finalizing its guidelines on this deduction, but it's not clear when those are coming, especially with the shutdown. In the meantime, accountants have decisions to make. Andrea Parnes is a CPA in New York. She says this deduction has been tripping up accountants since the law passed. She organized some training sessions for her peers.
They were all freaking out, like, oh my God, how are we ever going to explain this to our clients and how are we ever going to put this into practice?
Parnes says she's doing the best she can for her clients, like Cynthia King Dance Studio in Brooklyn.
1, 2, 3.
Where 7 and 8-year-old girls in powder blue leotards prepare for their moment in the spotlight. Remember that list of businesses that don't qualify for the deduction? Performing arts companies are on there. But Parnes says this studio's performers aren't paid professionals.
Of course, we all know that our children are amazingly gifted and many of them are going to be prima ballerinas.
For now, they're kids practicing for a recital. So Parnes says she is going to take the tax break for the studio. A different kind of dance company would be another story. As for Smithfield Manor, it's still waiting for final rules from the IRS. The nursing home's 2018 tax bill was due December 15th, so it filed for an extension. I'm Marielle Segarra for Marketplace.
Final note on the way out today of interest to the pickup truck drivers among you, I'd imagine. Also, and not coincidentally, it's of a piece with our Rumsfeldian theme, the unknown unknowns. If you were trying to bring a new truck to market and the Environmental Protection Agency was shut down, would anybody be buying said pickup? The answer, it seems, is no. No, they wouldn't. The CEO of Fiat Chrysler, Mike Manley, said today at the North American International Auto Show that it can't get emissions certification for its new Ram 3500 because the EPA isn't at work. Unknown unknowns, gang. All right, we're out of here. The Dow off 86 points today, 0.3%. The Nasdaq down 65 points, 0.9%. The S&P 500 down 13, about 0.5%. Our daily production team includes Bridget Bodner, Maria Hollenhorst, Sean McHenry, Daisy Palacios, and Daniel Shin. Our special project desk is Tommy Andres and Eliza Mills. Caitlin Esch is the producer on our wealth and poverty desk. I'm Kai Rizdahl. We will see you tomorrow, everybody. This is APM.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.